It's the Mayo News Football Podcast. I'm Rob Murphy, and we finally know what's going on. Mayo against Monaghan, championship draw made last Monday morning, the most boring thing you can possibly have in sport. And yes, we all tune in all the same. Edwin McGrail, how are you?
I'm good, Rob. I'm good. Yeah, looking forward to talking about a football match in the future rather than looking back. But yeah, we'll see.
I was on a long drive down from the East Coast to the West on Monday morning, just waiting for that half eight. 8:37, the draw came on. It was over at 8:38, I think, and Mayo out of the hat first, and you're just there going, please, please. And I'm just going to say it. I'm going to say it. Please be clear. Please be loud. Just take offence, people. Take offence. But it was Monaghan. I think, as John said, Edwin, before we bring in our guests, as John said, the least favoured team on this poll he did on the blog, no one came in lower than Monaghan. Why Tyrone were up there, I think they were just people just disrupting the vote, if I'm being honest.
Before. Yeah, no, to be honest, I think it's the worst draw, and our next guest is going to laugh at that, but I say that seriously. Like, I know the All-Ireland champions in the draw should be the worst draw, but I just think the nature of Tyrone's capitulation to Derry was far worse than how Monaghan performed against Derry, and so the road back is a bit longer for Tyrone, and particularly with all the absentees they have. I think it's the worst possible draw. I thought it potentially could be a little bit worse if it was in Clonus, but given Mayo's home record, that's up for debate as well.
If we weren't Mayo, Edwin, I think Mayo in McHale Park would have been like maybe the best possible draw, if you know what I'm trying to say. I'd be like, oh, I'd love a shot at that. Just pack the defence and see what they do. That's what I'd be saying.
Absolutely. And I think most teams in the draw would have felt that. They would like a crack off Mayo, whether they have serious aspirations of going far this year or not. I think everyone sees Mayo as being fallible. And there's a blueprint for how to frustrate Mayo, and Galway could do it with a 3-week run in. So if Galway could do it with a 3-week run in, teams that are well versed in it, surely they know what to do.
Malachy Clerkin is back on the Mayo News Football Podcast. How are you, Malachy?
I am well. I'm very well.
I want to stress this. Myself and Mike Finnerty discussed guests for next week, and we had your name down before we drew Monaghan. This is not some sort of token Monaghanism here. Ooh, that was a hard word to say. Sure, you're all delighted with this draw now. This will kickstart your championship.
This is the listening to the pair of you now.
Here we go.
I saw that poll on the Mayo News or Mayo GA blog as well, and I must say, It ranks up there maybe in the top five greatest days in Monaghan football, really, to be thought of as the hardest draw in a group containing the All-Ireland champions and the most upwardly mobile Ulster team around is quite the compliment. If you guys think you're pessimistic, You want to spend a couple of days up in Carrick or Blaney or Scotstown, you know? Like, there's very few people, and I promise you this is not poor-mouthing it in the slightest, but there's very few people walking around Monaghan today going, we have it, lads, we have it. We have Mayo. Like, trust me, you guys know, obviously, you know far more about Mayo football than anybody in Monaghan. But in Monaghan, they look at Mayo as a team that regularly plays at All-Ireland finals, a team that beat the Dubs last year, a team that still has three or four stone-cold legends of the game still playing for them. And trust me, absolutely nobody in Monaghan is rubbing their hands going, that's the draw we want. Now, that's not to say that they won't fancy it, because Monaghan, you know, they're always better as underdogs than they are as favourites. The idea that they've built themselves on the fact that they fear nobody is true. Like, there's no doubt about it. They will relish the test. But you're not wrong, Rob. They would have loved a little trip to Drogheda for a game against Louth. They would have been very happy with that. Trust me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Rather than going away over to Castlebar. Apart from anything, like, you don't understand how far away Castlebar feels from Monaghan. Like, from going, getting in their car and heading off, they'll be talking to each other going, Jesus, lads, will we have to leave? We might have to leave on Thursday. How the hell are we?
Yeah, that's what happens. You see, Malachy, when you live on the West Coast, I say Kerry and Donegal lads know this, you know how far everywhere is away. But I do get that feeling from that other side of the world, like, yeah, in the Midlands and stuff, it starts to go, oh, where, how do we
there
get
is, there is something in fairness about the trip, to, like some trips down to Kerry, you're on good roads the whole way. The trip cross country to Clonus not simple. We know from experience. And so the inverse is true as well, you know.
And that's the Clonus, Edwin. Like, if you take, and Clonus would be on your side of Monaghan, more or less. If you're coming from Carrickmacross, you're more or less coming from Dublin onward. They nearly drive to Dublin to get the road west, the N4 west or the M4 west.
Listen, there's a, like, it is just a bit of context here. Like, I want to explore this a bit more. But first of all, let's give Malachy the context for the pessimism, because for me, there's a split here, right? There are a group of Mayo fans going around since the All-Ireland final who, if we had every single player fit, would tell you that Clare could beat us. And I lose my mind with those people. It's like, there isn't a Division 2 team or in the land that are going to beat Mayo anywhere close to full strength. That's my feeling on it, and end of story. But at the same time, when those same people are coming in and chatting to me now, I'm like, in fairness, I'm starting to feel it myself. And you can tell people why. Just go through the list. It was on the pod yesterday, but it's in the paper today. Mike Finnerty has it.
Yeah, and we would have spoken after the Galway game that the one positive of losing that game was a 6-week gap to allow, you know, the walking wounded to get back in action. And the positive I can say is Paddy Durkin is back in full training and looks like he'll be ready to play. But the unfortunate counterpoint to that is 6 weeks also gives you a window for more fellas to get injured. And that's exactly what has happened. So I suppose the key injury really is Ryan O'Donoghue. He's a major doubt with a groin injury. And, you know, he's Mayo's go-to man, and he's just, his loss is hard to quantify. Next to that, Michael Plunkett, who has been a consistent performer in the league, he chipped a bone in his ankle during a training session last week. So he's out for a period of time. Oisin Mullen, who pulled up very visibly in the Galway game, he's a big doubt. Jordan Flynn, who picked up a broken bone in his foot in the league final, it's coming too soon for him is the word. And unfortunately, we're saying is the word because there's been no official injury update. I know there's due to be a media briefing during the week. We'll see what comes from that in terms of updates. But yeah, like, Mayo's injury problems have arguably got worse rather than better in the 6 week period. Mm. So therefore, I think you're right. I think if Mayo had everyone, if we said this during the league, you know, after Tommy Conroy got injured, that if Mayo had everyone available this year, you would give them a fair shout against absolutely anybody. But I can't remember, and I know 2018 and 2019 have been mentioned in terms of injury woes, but I don't remember the quantity of injury woes as we've had this year, and also the quality of players impacted. So you're looking at Brendan Harrison, Rob Henley, Jordan Flynn, Oisin Mullen, Michael Plunkett, Ryan O'Donoghue, and Brian Walsh. And Tommy Conroy, you know, who are major doubts are out.
It's tough. And Malachy, I think there's one element to it as well that people maybe don't think about, and we think about, is like, we're watching Oisin Mullen in both the All-Ireland final in a different context and in the Galway game. And we're like, a lot of people around me, and I was saying as well, just, he's not 100%. And that's the thing that gets lost sometimes when you have injury lists and guys missing games. It's the guys who are playing, but they're not 100%.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. Sorry, Ed, is Henley definitely gone?
No, he's a doubt. There's no clarity on it. He's, you know, he obviously missed the Galway game, the league final. Let me just check here. Yeah, he's missed the last four competitive matches. He picked up a knee injury against Armagh, in the warm-up. And Rory Byrne was drafted in at extreme short notice. And you remember, had to pick the ball out of his net within 15 seconds of that game, but has been very steady since. But you know, Rob Henley would be a loss in terms of long range frees as well. That's an issue where Mayo could be short. So again, it's unclear if he's going to be back or not for the game.
Yeah, it's a lot of disruption, Rob. You're right. You're exactly right. You know that what it does above all is it sends a feeling, whatever about, you know, observers looking in from the outside, it really sends a feeling through a squad that you seem to be starting over for every game or almost every half. You know, you're never getting to, like, every team sets out with a plan for the year. And like Jim Gavin was always a great one for saying, you know, the battle plan never survives first contact with the enemy. But you still have a battle plan. Like, you still set out for, right, you know, all things being equal, this is who we want to be. This is how we want to play. This is what we want to bring. And if you're picking up injuries to guys all along the way, like, I hadn't heard about Ryan O'Donoghue. Like, that's a killer. Like, that's... You know, much apart from his, you know, accuracy and all of that sort of stuff, like, taking his attitude out of the team is a real killer, you know, because, like, he, of all the new wave of players, Mayo players that have come through, him along with Oisin Mullen, like, are, you know, they're to the manor born straight away. They're spiky. They're don't take a backward step. They're exactly what you want in an inter-county player. They're exactly what you want in a young inter-county player, apart from anything else. You know, just not cowed by reputation or not cowed by environment or situation or anything like that. Ready for war. Like, and to lose somebody like him, like somebody like that, those sort of things really must hit morale among everything else, you know, whatever about their ability and skills and athleticism and all that sort of stuff. Like, morale has to be hard to keep morale up with that level of, what do they call it? Depreciation from week to week to week.
Lads, we all watch an awful lot of football, so let's put that on the table. But also note that we're just three lads that navel-gazing here when I ask this question, which is, do you wonder, Edwin, you can start on this, do you wonder, having an All-Ireland final in December, followed by a broken season, and then another All-Ireland final at an unusual time of year, and a burst of club championship football, are Mayo starting to feel the effects of that? Is that going to be one of the questions we'll be asking the experts afterwards when we're trying to figure out how they're having such bad luck?
Yeah, I'd be very, and again, it's something we would have mentioned in the last few weeks. I'd be very curious to hear the official response to the long list of injuries, because, you know, we're speaking very, I was going to say subjectively. We're speaking in a vacuum, like, you know, we don't know. We were asked to train in once in 2019 in response to talk about injuries, but
use that voucher.
I think it must have got lost in the post along the way. But we don't know what's happening in training. You know, you would have heard from players who were tired and players in there, like, they have the height of respect for what they do in terms of training, in terms of strength and conditioning. You know, but it is an awful long list of injuries. And of course, there's variety of injuries you can get. There's, you know, your soft tissue injuries, which sometimes come back to the level of preparation. Sometimes it can be bad luck. And then you have your bone injuries, which can be, you know, a small bit to do with conditioning, but they can be just bad luck, you know. And so you're looking at Jordan Flynn and Mike and Plunkett and Rob Henley coming down on his knee, you know, that could be more bad luck. Whereas the soft tissue injuries that you're looking at with your Oisin Mullins, your Paddy Durkins, your Ryan O'Donoghue's, I'm sure Mayo will be have to ask themselves those questions, you know, and I'd be curious to hear their answers to them. But the schedule for the last couple of years, it has been, quite full on. But again, these are things that at that level you prepare for and you plan for and you manage your workload around that. The league is a window in the season where, you know, you can taper lads off if you need to. And Mayo had that luxury as well when after the Armagh game, you know, where they were safe in the league at that stage. So if they didn't feel the need to do it, they must have been happy enough with where they were at from a conditioning point of view from there to here.
This podcast is proudly supported by the Oxford Arms in London. The next time you're in Camden Town, why not call to our corner of Mayo in London? The Oxford Arms, you can't miss it. It's the one with the big Mayo crest outside.
What do you think, Valaki? I mean, do you look at Mayo and wonder, has it been 24 months that are just starting to tell?
I don't really, to be honest with you. I think there's an element of sort of Occam's razor here. I think rafts of injuries come around to an awful lot of teams and an awful lot of sports, an awful lot of more professional teams than Mayo or any GAA team get a long list of injuries just through wear and tear, especially when, as Ed says, it's such a variety of injuries. If it was all one sort of thing, I'd be a bit more suspicious, but there's a wide variety of things, different incidences, chipped bones and all that sort of stuff from collisions. I think on a certain level, you know, a cigar is just a cigar, and like it is just a level of bad luck. Like a lot of other teams have had, they haven't had quite that schedule. I think Rob, you could be right on that level. You know, everybody had their split season and everybody had their rushed championship in 2020 and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, Mayo have played more or less every game that is possible to play in the last three seasons. They're the only team that has got to two All-Ireland finals and a league final in that span of time. Now, look, that's just three games more than other teams, but it's still more games. But I don't know. I was expecting, exactly as Ed said at the start, that the six-week gap would iron an awful lot of this out. And
it might, Malachy. It might. You know, this is the thing. Like, like, I'd love to tell you that this is all the management leaking out stuff to us, just to. But there is no communication, and I cannot stress enough
between the Mayo and its local press. I know that. I know you guys just lie about that all the time. But
I'd love to. We want to talk a little bit more beyond before we finish today, because you're off interviewing an intercounty player today. That's where you are. That is like other journalists will be ringing you up going, what was it like? Congratulations. But we'll talk about that in a bit, because what I want to talk about now is just Monaghan. Like, what's the feeling that management team looked the biz? There was a sense, you know, a real sense that, oh, you know what, there's something in Monaghan. Like, that thing that sticks in my mind is, God, Monaghan got so close to beating Tyrone, and they must look at what Tyrone did and they must think to themselves, yeah, my God, we could have won an All-Ireland. Is that true? And is the drop-off from that as big as a Mayo drop-off from one season to the next in the moods?
There's a few things there, Rob. Well, put it this way. Monaghan have always thought, even when Tyrone were winning All-Irelands in 2003 and 2005 with glorious under 21 teams plus Peter Canavan, Monaghan people would always have been sitting there going, we could beat those fuckers, Jesus Christ. And Tyrone, like, you know, the level of hatred there is deep and long standing, and will hopefully last long into the future. So absolutely last year, when Tyrone won the All-Ireland final, there was an amount of Monaghan people who almost wouldn't even have watched the bloody thing, because they were going, oh my God, we 100% should have beaten them in Croke Park in the Ulster final. And, you know, it was an old style Monaghan-Tyrone game. Tyrone went ahead, Monaghan got it back level with about 10 minutes to go, and it was there for them. Peter Hart did the business for Tyrone, and they found their way through, and that was the end of it. And they were after that, Monaghan, I think it would have been more so that they saw it as a missed opportunity, a real missed opportunity. You see, people kind of overstate, or they think Monaghan have a greater standing or history than they have. Like, Monaghan have been in one All-Ireland final in their history, and that was in 1930. Monaghan have won, like, when they were in an All-Ireland semi-final in 2018, it was their first one in 30 years. You had to go back to 1988.
John's blog. I was going to ask you about this. The first ever meeting between Mayo and Monaghan was 1980. Like, I wanted to ask you about that. Like, I would have presumed there was a great monodemes of the 40s or the 70s or something.
Sorry, I thought this was the first. This is going to be
clarification. The first meeting in the league. So we've met 20 times in league football. Yeah. And the very first league meeting was 1980.
Yeah. And we've never met in championship. You know? The point that I was sort of getting at was if and when Monaghan ever in my lifetime get to an All-Ireland final, and God bless me and save us all if they ever manage to win it, it's not going to be, or at least it won't be seen in Monaghan as, you know, a chance to create a dynasty or anything like that. If and when Monaghan win an All-Ireland, it's going to be a one-off aligning of the planets. And so when they went to Tyrone, got to the final last year and actually won it, Monaghan people were really seriously going, oh my God, that was a chance. Mm-hmm. And chances come around so, so rarely because of all the things that people laud Monaghan football for, you know, the fact that they have such a small population, the fact that they hold on to their players, all this sort of stuff. This is a roundabout way of saying no, Rob. I don't think anybody really thought after that Monaghan were going to go away and go, right, we're very close to the mountaintop. We just need to add a little bit more. Now, they may have thought that inside the squad, and that's fine, but that really isn't the way Monaghan people think. Monaghan people know pretty well that they're starting at the bottom of the mountain every year. And that's why a result like Derry just didn't surprise an awful lot of people, because they have a great, great history of helping out other aspiring Ulster teams when they need a bit of a boost. Like I realised, I went and checked it after Derry beat them. Since Monaghan won the Ulster title in 2015, which is seven seasons, they've been beaten by six different Ulster teams in the Ulster Championship.
Great stat.
Like, and that's so it's not just that they lose to Tyrone or they lose to Donegal. They were beaten by Derry this year. They were beaten by Down in 2016. They were beaten by Fermanagh in 2018, which was the year now that they gathered themselves through the qualifiers and went through the Super Eights and went to the All-Ireland semi-final. But they are never, like, Ulster football is what it is, but like Monaghan are never, they never go into an Ulster Championship thinking, right, you know, we're favourites to get through here and we will justify favouritism. You know, people saw the Derry game, and I guarantee you Monaghan people after 15 minutes when they saw how Derry had set up and how Monaghan had not set up, and they were sort of 3 points down, a lot of Monaghan people were just going, yeah, seen this before. You could have absolutely guaranteed how that game was going to work out. They were going to give away a stupid goal, at least one before halftime, turned out to give away two, and they were going to rally through the opening period of the second half, get within touching distance, and after that, is in the lap of the gods. Because that is what Monaghan games are in league and championship. They get it close. They very rarely get hammered. They rarely hammer anybody. And they got it back to 3 points, and then Derry got their goal and stretched away.
Big thanks to Nigel Reap, Office Supplies, Print and Signs. Of course, you hear the messages for the Oxford Arms in London as well. Big thanks to all our sponsors to make this podcast happen. And it allows us to produce this for you every week. For those of you who want to sign up to patreon.com/Mayo Podcast.
Just looking at it's looking at Monaghan's record since they came up to Division One. Like, they've been remarkably consistent in the league.
Yeah.
When it comes to championship, there's been a huge level of inconsistency. They've had those defeats, like you listed them out there. I mentioned them in the paper today as well. Like, most of those games that they've lost in Ulster were games they would have been expected to win from the outside looking in, with the exception maybe of Tyrone last year, although I'm sure Monaghan would have felt differently. And I think Donegal in 2016. Like, losing to Cavan 2 years in a row just wouldn't be acceptable. And is it something about the way they perform that there nearly needs to be an edge to things, that if they're if they're that they don't have what, you know, we always talked about with Dublin, a high cruising speed, it has to be fifth gear or nothing with them in a way that would be the case with Mayo at times.
I think there's a couple of instances there, or a couple of examples there, that you're talking about that. Like, they are justifiably very proud of that league record. They are the second longest serving team in Division One after Kerry. And relegating Dublin this year was one of the great, great days, you know? And like, I did a piece on them before that last day. Their survival rate in Division One is insane. Like, I found a stat, like, 3 out of the last 5 years, they were being relegated going into injury time in the last game. Like, on the 70th, amazing. On 3 of the last 5 games, they were being relegated and still managed to stay up. Like, it's ludicrous. But I often wonder, to what end? Like, and I've put this to them, and I've put it to the former players and all of this sort of stuff. I had a good chat with Paul Finley about it one of the days, and he was half agreeing with me. I was kind of going, but what is the point of staying in Division One if you then go out of the Ulster Championship to a team you should beat? Yeah. Like, is there any correlation there? Are you staying in Division One for the sake of staying in Division One when other teams are putting their headspace and their resources into the Championship? And he sort of agreed with me up to a point. But then I saw Dick Clerkin making a good point that the reason Darren Hughes and Conor McManus and a lot of these players play until they're 34, 35, the reason Monaghan hold on to guys and they don't lose them at 28, 29, part of that reason is the fact that they have Division One football next year, that they're going to play Kerry, that they're going to play Dublin, that they're going to play Mayo, that they're going to play the good Ulster teams. And like, that's a big carrot to keep guys staying on. And that if you go down to Division Two, you kind of lose them somewhere along the way. And that a small county like Monaghan is always, they're always prone to losing a championship game somewhere along the way. And I don't know what the mindset is. I don't know, is it that they don't get themselves into enough of a state against, say, a Derry or a Fermanagh, or like, geez, if you even go back, they've lost qualifier games to Offaly, to Longford. Like,
nothing wrong with losing to Longford.
No, but you know, but they do, like, and they find the right route through. They're bewildering. I always say that they're a fantastic team to follow, because, as I say, they very rarely get hammered, but they very rarely hammer anybody. I think Colm Shalvey's local reporter up there had a great stat midway through the league that between Championship and League, they had drawn something like 8 of their last 15 games.
Wow.
Like, in normal time, because the Armagh game last year, of course, went to extra time and all that sort of stuff. And they have so many one-point games either way. So they're a fantastic team to follow for drama. But they are bewildering and confounding, like everybody's county team are as well.
It's funny, though, like, because that would have been a fear in Mayo about getting relegated to Division 2 for a long time. And it became this badge of honour that we were the longest surviving team in Division 1. And we were relegated to Division 2. And it was very apparent very quickly that teams like Mayo, and I would say apply the same to Monaghan, are just too good for Division 2 and bounce straight back up.
Yeah.
And it didn't halt Mayo's growth whatsoever. And yeah, I think it's a very, very good point that you're making there. And I just think sometimes the structure, like, that is being played at, like Ulster is such a bear pit. And you know, if Monaghan were in a different province, or if the league was the championship, as has been suggested, I think it would suit teams like Monaghan a lot more than it might suit the Kerrys or the Dublins or even the Mayos. But you know,
well, put it this way, actually, Ed, on a tangible gameplay football level, when Monaghan play in Division One and they play against a Kerry or a Dublin or whoever they play against. Like their sort of style is, it's defensive. It's getting players behind the ball and finding a way to break at pace. Like it's a counter-attacking game. And it works because they crowd out the other team's really good forwards, and they have a team spirit and a togetherness and a pace about them and a tigerishness about them. But what it means is that they don't play an awful lot of teams who are not top class.
Yes,
they don't get a game. They don't get two games in the league against a team who's going to sit in against them. So they don't get to play like, let's, for the sake of argument, they don't play like an Offaly or a Louth or somebody who is going to try and keep the score down against, say, Conor McManus and Jack McCarron. They just don't get that, the reps of playing games like that. And maybe that feeds into why when they then come up against, like Fermanagh in 2018 was an absolute case in point. Mm. Rory Gallagher again, by the way. But an absolute case in point where they played that game. It was up in Oma. They kicked a few wides here and there. Fermanagh had 15 men inside their 45. They frustrated them and frustrated them. Rory Beggan missed a few frees. They kept it. There was 2 points in it. They were 2 points up in the 70th minute. And a high ball, Fermanagh lad went for a point, it dropped short. Rory Beggan flapped at it, and I think it was Owen Donnelly punched it to the net. And there you go, you're out. You're out of Ulster. And because you haven't put that team away, because you haven't had the experience of, you've spent all your time in Division One being Fermanagh against other teams. And I wonder, does that feed into it? Like that's as near as I can get to a footballing reason why they are prone to the odd fuck up against, you know, teams that they should be beating, and they are better against teams that should beat them.
I think what you're saying so is that Mayo should have 15 players behind the ball and frustrate 100%. The hell out of Monaghan. And we've been all talking for the last few weeks that the template to beat Mayo is to get bodies behind the ball and frustrate them. But maybe Mayo could try something similar themselves.
Well, put it this way, like, you know, 15 minutes into that Derry game, on my very Monaghan flavored WhatsApp groups, so many of my friends were kind of going, like, Monaghan are playing here as if they've never played in an Ulster Championship match, as if they've never seen the other team set up defensively. Yeah. What are you doing? And it was genuinely like games were.
Lads, this sounded like therapy. This is therapy between two.
I know, yeah, it's
county
awful.
County support. No, but it's like all your problems are our problems. We're kind of going, oh my god, this is how we feel. Like, what the hell?
It's a real Fort Yorkshireman sketch here, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. We're going to be talking about stony grey soil in a few minutes, and we're going to just go, ah, no, it's too much. It's too much similarities here. But my god,
we have better ports than you. We'll take that.
Yeah, no arguments there.
Just another question, Malachy. There would be a lot of interest from a Mayo perspective that obviously Donny Buckley is involved with Monaghan now, and he's extensive experience with Mayo, and is fondly thought of by all the players that he would have coached, and obviously Liam Sheedy is involved as well, and Banty is the main man, but he always strikes me as a guy who's always willing to surround himself with. Where he might see himself as being weak, he'll surround himself with people that will compensate for that. But what's the feeling on that management ticket in terms of what it has brought for Monaghan this year? And look, at it's obviously, we're speaking after a defeat to Derry, so maybe there's a certain perspective at the minute, but what's the kind of overall sense?
The overall sense is Banty was a very unconvincing reappointment when it happened. He is such a well-known figure in the county. Everybody knows him, whether through football or through his various businesses. And put it this way, Malachy O'Rourke was seen as this brilliant tactician, this guy who was prepared for everything, who came up with tactical plans to beat the likes of Donegal, to beat the likes of Galway in that Super 8s game over in Salt Hill, and was revered almost, and was seen as this really good footballing mind. Banty is, look, he is a guy who has huge energy, has been around Monaghan football since forever, and I remember running into one of the Monaghan players the week after he was appointed. Oh God, it was at one of the All-Ireland finals. Anyway, whenever it was, 2018 maybe? I don't know. So it must have been the end of 2019. But he had been appointed, and I ran into one of the players and I kind of raised an eyebrow and I went, Jesus, Banty, really? And he, like, the first words out of his mouth was, look, he is a good backroom team. And at the time it was Conor Laverty from Down and the fella that's in the Tyrone backroom team. Donnelly.
Peter Donnelly.
Peter Donnelly, exactly, yeah. And I always thought that was interesting that the first word out of this player's mouth was, oh, he's a good backroom team. As if, look, I know.
Yeah.
He is who he is. And look, he is who he is. You know, he's a big businessman. He's an organizer of groups of people. There's no lack of energy there or anything like that. I just don't know if he is the greatest tactical. I do know that he's not the greatest tactical mind that ever played the game. And I don't know if it's enough to overcome the sort of disadvantages that Monaghan have in that, they only ever have 23 players really to play at any one time. I think Donny Buckley, when Conor Laverty left and Peter Donnelly both left, getting in Donny Buckley, people kind of went, yeah, geez, that's serious now. And that's his thing. Like he does, surround himself with people to overcome the sort of the doubts that people have. And that's fine. And I think Donny Buckley has been seen as a very positive influence in that. Like, this is the first time, now it didn't go well, but this is the first time in any of our memories that Monaghan have played with three men in the full forward line. Yeah. Conor McManus, Jack McCarron and Gary Moen. Like, as I say, it didn't go well and it was probably the wrong tactic for the day in question. But it is seen as something that is a positive move. It is something that, like, God knows poor Conor has played the whole of his career in a one-man fun forward line and taken the lumps because of it. So there would be, and Vinnie Corey is in there now as well. Obviously, you haven't played a long time with a lot of these players. Nobody really knows what Sheedy is doing, what he's bringing to it. Everybody presumes, look, he's a really serious man. He is obviously there providing something, and he is at the games. Like, it's very interesting. You see him on games that there's big hurling matches on RTE. He is at the Monaghan game. He is there on the sideline. So he is obviously bringing something, but nobody is particularly sure what that is. I don't know. There would be very few tears. And I like the man very well. I've known him for a long time. It's very fair to say that there'll be very few tears shed in Monaghan when they move on from Banty. At least that's the feeling right now. Of course, they get past Mayo, they go on a run, they get to an All-Ireland final, and sure, he's the greatest man that ever walked the earth. But that's the ups and downs of county management, I suppose.
How big does this game feel as we come to kind of the conclusion for now? Because we'll be going into the details of the preview next week. But how big is this as a fixture in the All-Ireland Championship, do you think?
Well, it's huge, really. Like, two Division One teams playing against each other is always big. I think for Monaghan, like you have to understand, really, that at this stage, they know there's a couple of them coming towards the end. Like Conor McManus will go down as one of the great Monaghan people, you know, that ever did anything. And the idea that, you know, 2018 is 4 years ago, and that was his one All-Ireland semi-final, that we never got him back there, that we never made enough of him to get him to an All-Ireland final. That's going to hurt people. You know, I don't think he'll retire this year. I think he'll probably stay for another year at least. But there would be a feeling there that you don't want it to end for the likes of him and Darren Hughes. You don't want it to end like this, you know, getting beaten by Derry and then going out to Mayo so early in the championship, like being done by June. So it's a big game, yeah. Like, it's very big. It's Monaghan people always have very low expectations, I find. But it takes very little for them to get high expectations. You know, all it takes is a win. Like, you get a win and they get a great buzz of energy around the county. Because it is one of those counties where the football team really dictates the mood of the place for a certain length of time. And I know, obviously, your county is the same. But the difference, I think, between the two counties is that you guys have, and perfectly understandably and rightly, a level of expectation, you know, in that you guys have crushing disappointments when it doesn't go well. Whereas in Monaghan, there isn't that level of it. Because they know, we all know that the last decade, this has been the good old days. Like Monaghan's level, for as long as most of us were alive, like I think they won one championship match in the 90s. You know, Dick Clerkin and Tommy Freeman and all these guys started their career playing Waterford and Carlow in Division 4. This is not the level. Like most Monaghan people presume that there will be a time in the future where they don't have a Conor McManus and they don't have Darren Hughes and a Jack McCarron playing at the same time, and they will be back at bobbing between Division 3 and Division 2, because they reckon that's the, you know, these are the great days. So there isn't that level of absolute gut-wrenching disappointment when they go out of the championship early. Because like we're very, very used to it. What we're not used to is getting up the other end and getting Croke Park in our nostrils and really kind of thinking, Jesus, this could happen. So that's a roundabout way of saying it is a big match, purely because if they get past it, well, then it's on. Because the way the qualifier draw has come out, I think whoever wins this match and whoever wins the Tyrone Armagh match will absolutely fancy the next round, because they will reckon they can beat anybody out of the provincial finalists, and will absolutely fancy the All-Ireland quarterfinal then. So like this is because the qualifier draw is going to knock out a couple of reasonably big guns. So there is a path after you get over this game. I think this game is going to be a huge springboard for whoever wins it. And they can, because the path opens up for them then. You know, you get on a roll, couple of big teams are gone, you have the provincial finalists next, that's doable, all that sort of stuff. So I think that's where they're at. They're at a point where they're very dubious of the idea of being able to beat Mayo. Now, this is the county in general that we're talking about. I'm sure the players are well up for it. But I'd say Monaghan supporters will travel completely going, sure, Jesus, Mayo are great. Who are we to be thinking that we can beat Mayo?
I'll be watching out for this now. I'll be sitting beside a few Monaghan fans and I'm saying, well, how's your mood?
But I can't hear that. That's half of what they'll be thinking. Like,
yeah.
You know.
And, yeah,
exactly. But God almighty, if they get out of Castlebar with a win, they'll be going, right, who's next?
Game on.
And then, And then we'll obviously lose to Kildare in the qualifying.
Limerick reaching the quarterfinals with a glorious win of Monaghan.
This podcast is proudly supported by the Oxford Arms in London. The next time you're in Camden Town, why not call to our corner of Mayo in London? The Oxford Arms. You can't miss it. It's the one with the big Mayo crest outside.
All right, we have a little bit to do in the clubhouse section of the podcast for our Patreon listeners, so we'll do that now. But Edwin, I think we know where we stand now. We're not going to out-pessimism the Monarchs, no matter how hard we try.
Well, listen to Malachy there. It's one of many things I think we have in common. We're all playing ourselves down, but we're both in counties where football is borderline religion, and where we're in a phase. And Mayo obviously had been reaching all Ireland finals, but have reached in the last decade a consistency in terms of Division One and in terms of getting to the last four and to finals. And Monaghan similarly, like obviously Monaghan's playing resources are much smaller than Mayo, but both counties, their mood can oscillate depending on how things are going. And I think Malachy is right. I think whoever wins this, it just changes the narrative. It changes the mood straight away, because every team that is playing their first game in the qualifier is doing so after a defeat, and that brings its own problems and its own introspections and so on and so forth. And it's amazing the amount of people I've met in the last couple of weeks in Mayo who are saying we might be better off losing, giving the players a break and going at it again next year. And I'm like, if you get a bit of momentum, if you get over Monaghan, if you get a couple of guys back, you can't pass that up either. Like,
And look, I talked to you guys plenty on the podcast over the years, and that level of sort of default pessimism always astonishes me about Mayo, genuinely, because Ed, you sort of alluded to it there when it comes to resources. Like the job, and I know there's a huge rump of the Mayo support that won't hear one good word about James Horan at this stage. But the job Horan did to get to two All-Ireland finals while repopulating the team with so many new players, like, I'm not sure Mayo people really appreciate how absolutely impossible that would be in the vast majority of counties.
Yeah.
Like that is, if you took somewhere like Monaghan and talked about doing that, like taking out close to a dozen all-time players and repopulating them with young lads and making two All-Ireland finals in a row, Monaghan people would think that is the most outlandish suggestion that you could possibly make short of actually winning an All-Ireland. And for Mayo people to be pessimistic on the back of that, and worse than that, to be outwardly aggressive towards James Horan and the setup and everything to do with Mayo football is hilarious to watch.
It's the herd, I think, Malachy, because it's so irrational. Like, I have this theory, and I think I might be out there in about 4% of Mayo people who would ever say these words. But I think 2018 was a real missed opportunity. Like, most people are like, they were kind of gone. They were put out of their misery. Sure as well to go to Newbridge and compete like there. My thinking is, my God, lads, if they had got to the Super 8s and regenerated, it's the same Mayo as ever. And that was just another year gone. I don't know why people don't think like that here, but they don't for some reason.
Well, I think it's an accumulation of defeats and frustration that has built up.
Yes.
And I think some of that is rational and understandable. I think you know, Billy Joe always says that Mayo have both overachieved and underachieved in recent years.
Yeah.
Overachieved in getting to two All-Ireland finals, very much underachieved against Tyrone. And you talked about Monaghan having a long winter last year looking at Tyrone.
It
was in the halfpenny place reflections here, because that was the best opportunity Mayo have ever had, and I think that frames the discussion since.
It's like that line from the the James song, "Sit Down." If I hadn't seen such riches, I could live with being poor. That's what it is, you know.
Yeah, so that's true. Exactly it. Yeah, perfect.
Yeah, no, it's a really good point, Edwin. Like, it's that balance, Malachy, that you're trying to strike. Like, there's a lot of utter frustration at what slipped. But someone asked in our Q&A podcast, they asked Billy Joe a couple of weeks ago on Patreon, like, can you ever see Mayo being able to perform in an All-Ireland final again? He goes, of course I can see it. If I didn't see that show, what would the point to be even supporting them, was his exact words. And just coming from Billy Joe, a man of rationale, it struck a chord that every so often, I think all of us, from a positive sense and a negative sense in Mayo, need to be snapped out of ourselves every so often to say, stop for a second, just think. And I think that's what this match is all about. I think everyone's just going along here in a kind of a measured enough mood, and that's whichever team wins, you're just going to go, yeah, here we go,
yeah.
Off again. Malachi, yeah. You stick with me for the clubhouse section for 5 minutes, right? And we're going to have a quick chat about your the Connacht final and some other bits and bobs. Edwin, you've got to go. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Rob. Thanks, Malachi. We'll see you in 2 weeks, 10 days.
Can't
be making it.
God, no. Jesus Christ, there's an awful lot of guy on that weekend. I'll see. The Munster and Leinster Hurling finals are on that weekend.
Don't mind that. That's not
I will be working both days, so we'll see.
All right, folks, stick with us if you're on our Patreon subscribers on patreon.com/Mayo Podcasts for a little bit of a chat. But in the meantime, we'll talk to you in a week.